have a treat for you today, the second in our series of the stories of triumph. Has anybody ever felt anxious? Just once or twice? You're going to find some resonance with Larry Curtin's story. I want to invite Larry Curtin up. And has anybody ever felt otherized in any way? You ever felt like other? Yeah, you're going to find some resonance with the story that Zula Reeves has to share with us today. These are both really important stories, I think, for this time in our history, this time in our nation. And so we invite you to settle in and receive.
I'm Larry, and this is my story.
I grew up in Pleasant Hill in a tight-knit family that included my mom, my dad, my brother Mike, and my sister Sharon.
I was a late bloomer and the baby of the family. Mike is 5 years older than me, and Sharon is 11 years older.
My dad was overprotective. He believed there was danger outside the family nest, and his message was always, don't go too far.
Well, my mom's message was, get out there and explore.
There was a battle of these two attitudes between my parents.
For better or worse, I've carried that battle of their attitudes on within me.
When I was in high school, I experimented with smoking marijuana, and it sent me into a horrible panic. I ran out of the house looking for relief anywhere.
Afterwards, I had anxiety symptoms every time I drove to work. When the symptoms started to fade away, I was convinced to try it again.
But I had the exact same reaction and went running out of the house.
The next day, I sat in a daze in the backyard all day, and I vowed myself I would never smoke, drink, or do anything that would make me feel so out of control.
Those contrasting parental attitudes of adventure and caution are not always at war within me. Sometimes they dance together in just the right combination.
I've always loved to drive, and I like to help people who are in trouble.
As a teenager, I got involved in REACT, a CV communication system that rescue groups used.
When I was 18, I developed my own volunteer emergency road rescue service.
Helping others in this way was much more of an authentic pastime for me than getting high.
School was okay, unless I was asked to do a presentation. One time in social studies class, I stood up and I looked at the class to read my one-page synopsis and
I froze. I completely lost my voice and even my breath.
Contrary to my dad's stay close and stay safe warnings, my first move out of the house was all the way across the country to Boston.
With my big sister and her boyfriend, Dave.
I was in my 20s when we packed up my truck and drove across the states.
We lived in Boston together for several years until I got my own place.
I am always willing to try something new work-wise and am quick to move up the ladder.
I've been a bowling alley mechanic, a professional driver, and an optician. And during those 6 years in Boston, I was an electronic salesman, a dispatcher, and a payroll driver.
One day while working as a payroll driver, I was making a delivery in a high rise, and I got in an elevator full of people.
My anxiety rises when I feel claustrophobic and don't have any way to escape easily.
While we were going up the elevator, it just stopped midway.
And then it dropped 2 feet.
Whoa. Exciting.
With the mounting fear of the elevator dropping completely, people were yelling and getting hysterical.
I went numb. I'm not a screamer, but I knew I had to get out of there. I felt lightheaded and my heart started racing.
During those terrifying moments, we all managed to pry open the doors.
The opening between the elevator and the next floor was about 2 feet, and we each climbed through.
This experience deepened the groove of anxiety within me, and then a dental issue I developed around that time called soft teeth syndrome.
I suffered through bone scrapings and 13 root canals. It created so much stress that I couldn't even sit in a dental chair again.
Meanwhile, my parents were having some health issues back home, so I returned to California to help out.
While I was home, my brother taught me to fly an airplane. What a thrill it was to be up above the ground in a bird's eye view of the land.
Whether it's a plane or a car, I feel so free as long as I'm in the driver's seat.
Don't make me be a passenger, though. Then I want to split as soon as possible.
As long as I'm in control on the adventures that my inner mother encourages, I can deal with my inner father, who silently chants, "It's dangerous out there."
While I was having great fun learning to fly planes with my brother, something out east was tugging at my soul.
The Smoky Mountains. For as long as I could remember, I wanted to be there.
I followed the call and secured an apartment in Tennessee by phone.
And took to the open road.
I easily found a job there, but it was halfway across the state from my new apartment.
It was still worth it to me. I loved living in the mystical beauty of the Smoky Mountains, and my dream job had arrived.
I'd be driving big rigs.
The freedom to see different areas of the country is a lot of fun to me. I've never been afraid of the road.
I remember just where I was on a long-haul drive in New Jersey when I received the phone call that my dad had died.
I immediately pulled over into a rest area to be with the pain of the loss and being so far away.
My dad had Parkinson's disease and cancer.
My mom had already made her transition by then. She was a smoker and had developed lung cancer.
I'm so glad that Dad was there the day I pushed through my anxiety and got my pilot's license. It was the last time I flew.
After Dad's death, my sister Sharon came out to visit with me in Tennessee and brought a book called A Return to Love from Marianne Williamson.
It was so good, I ran right out and purchased the full A Course in Miracles.
After that, I listened to spiritual audio tapes at the time, and I remember driving through Cades Cove, a wildlife park in the Smoky Mountains, listening to these tapes.
I was thinking about how I've always felt so deeply connected to nature and other people.
So I said to Sharon, "These teachings are how I've been living my life. It's just really amazing."
We were Catholic, and I didn't realize that there were other churches around that believed this way. So we found unity together.
My brother Mike liked the New Thought beliefs too, and he and his wife Jill came to Unity of Walnut Creek around then too.
About 7 years ago, I heard about Circulation Day here at Unity of Walnut Creek.
I had a nice bicycle that I wasn't using anymore, so I brought it to the drop-off day.
John Ortiz was volunteering there, and he said,
"This is unbelievable! I've been praying for a bicycle."
Well, then here you go.
He invited me to come to Unity the following Sunday.
I wasn't comfortable going to church by myself, so he met me at the door that Sunday, and we came in together.
When I told him I played drums, he said, "I'm going to get you in."
Now, wait a minute, don't move so fast.
"Don't worry," John said. "Scotty will help you."
Scotty and the crew did eventually usher me into the music team, and we're with love, acceptance, and patience.
The first Sunday, I was far from ready to drum in front of people, but I could not wait to return to Unity the next week.
It took at least a year before I got up the nerve to drum.
When I started, I was trying to find a way to enjoy it rather than just getting through it.
And then one day, I played a Carol Manson concert here, and she sang a song called "Turn Me Around," and it did exactly that for me.
I was thinking, we can't do this kind of music in church, yet we were.
I didn't know where she was going with the song, but the drumming was flowing through me, and Brooksy didn't miss a key.
I was completely inside the music, not thinking about anything or anyone around me.
Carol's lyrics and projection were phenomenal. This intense energy was building as she was singing about a brand new day, The cymbal rolls were just coming through, and it ended in a big round of applause.
This was the turning point for where I am now. My drumming performance anxiety completely left me after that song.
I realized that I can give over to spirit and let the music happen through me.
I wanted to volunteer more at Unity, and then I met Sherry, who taught me how to run the camera. I even started doing shoots for her for work.
The most incredibly positive things have happened to me at Unity.
One day, Terry walked in, and I said, "Who is that?" I felt an immediate connection.
I saw someone signing for her and realized she was deaf, and I was intrigued with her.
John thought we would be a good match.
Me? Go up and ask her out? I couldn't do that, no way. The fact that a communication intervention was needed made it far easier.
Over the course of the year, we got to know each other as friends, and we were married four years ago.
It's so wonderful to have a similar spiritual views, enjoy spiritual books together, and have the same outlook on a higher power and source energy.
And we are a great fit.
This is the first relationship that Terry has had with someone willing to learn sign language.
It's not been easy for me, and I'm slow, but she's patient and enthusiastic about how much we can communicate with sign language now.
Terry has been such a great source of support for me, too.
In addition to the anxiety I deal with, I've been diagnosed with a condition, neurological condition called chorea.
If I keep my legs down while I sit, tingling and heat goes up my spine, and more anxiety starts manifesting.
I found ways to manage it. I have a calming seated position with one leg up.
I've learned to redirect neurological signals by tapping or applying pressure. It takes my concentration away and my mind from creating a sense of calm.
If the nerve pain fires in a certain way, my body can snap like a rubber band and take me down to my knees.
It only lasts a few minutes, but I often worry it's going to happen, especially while I'm drumming.
Ultimately, I know I'm in a loving place here, and whatever happens, it'll be okay.
I love to be of service. I'm now the head of the AV team and security at Unity.
I would not have imagined that when I started coming here.
Spirit always has a better plan.
Unity has offered me a lot of growth opportunities.
Do you know how often we're invited to close our eyes in meditation or hold hands in circles here? These things are terribly nerve-wracking for me.
I meditate in the morning by myself, 30, 45 minutes, no problem.
When I meditate with others, I get concerned they will be disturbed by my movements to calm my nerves.
If I'm holding hands on both sides, I feel trapped. Everyone looks so happy making the connection, and I'm looking for the exit.
I want to feel connected in groups, so I've persisted through the challenges.
This week I completed my first class at Unity, the Four Pillars of Prosperity tithing class.
The battle of my mind went on, and I felt like I was fighting to stay in the circle in those class sessions, but I did it for 6 weeks.
I've seen counselors and reading books and getting down to the root of this anxiety.
A month ago, I met a health counselor who's helping me with nutrition and supplements. I'm weaning off soda and drinking more water.
And just 2 weeks ago, I tied the full 10% of income for the first time in class. It really felt great.
I don't have to hold on to or try to control the flow of money or anything else.
When I think of all the monetary gifts I've received in my life, it makes me want to give more. It's really a cool feeling.
I love to be a service in honor of our connection to another, and I love to feel free.
I know I'll get past the blocks and feel the freedom of flying a plane again.
Spiritually, I've touched an even sweeter freedom than flying.
The kind that's beyond my control.
Like those suspended moments drumming the Carol Manson song or the sweet release I felt when I tied for the first time in class.
These freedoms are not born of control. They come from complete surrender to spirit.
And no plane can take me that high.
Bless Larry with a song. You are a blessing to the world.
You are the heart, you are the hands, you are the voice of spirit on earth. And who you are and all you do is a blessing to the
Trey Boxer has agreed to join us for this second story.
Hi, I'm Zula, and this is my story.
I was a mixed-race child in the late 50s, when mixed-race marriages were still illegal.
I look like my mother more than my brothers or two sisters do. Mom is Hawaiian and Polish-born. She was born during World War II, and Hawaiians were not treated well then.
When she married my dad, a black man from Arkansas, his family did not accept her, so the racial hatred she had always felt from others continued.
I was the firstborn, and my mother chose the Aboriginal name Zula for me. My name is linked to Poland, Africa, and Australia.
My name became yet another reason for the kids at school to ridicule me, so I went by my middle name, Michelle.
A lot of ugliness happened to our family that I internalized and never spoke about.
The deepest imprint of hatred was left on my three-year-old self. My family lived in Germany at the time, and we were at Oktoberfest. A woman walked right up to me out of earshot of my parents, and she said, "You should not be here."
I froze. With every cell of my body, I knew what she meant. I shouldn't exist at all. The walls went up right then. I call them my Uzi-proof walls.
The world told me I was ugly based on my skin color and features. At school, the kids chased me around and the teachers looked down on me because of my race.
My family operated in secret, so my heartache was kept private. No one else could possibly understand anyway. I was one of a kind.
Even though I had siblings, I felt alone. As siblings, we are different shades and different hair. And apparently, all of that was proportional to our worth as measured by the world around us.
When my mother's family gets together, we look like the United Nations. Her brother married an Irish woman, and her sister married a black man.
Collectively, we range from white-skinned with red hair to black-skinned with afros.
When we were kids, my grandfather took all of us out for ice cream, and the man behind the counter said, "You brought the whole neighborhood in."
"Nope," my grandfather said, "they're all mine." At least he claimed us.
My dad was in the Army, and we moved a lot. On one of our moves, we were headed from Tacoma back to D.C.
It was in 1969, in the middle of the night, and Dad had a new job to report to at 7 a.m. in the morning.
We were looking for a hotel and kept getting further and further from the military base until we found one with a vacancy sign out front.
The kids were all asleep except me. I never have been able to sleep, so I was pretend sleeping in the back seat. My dad got back in the car and said that there was no room available.
We sat there for a long time in silence, marked by the whispers from my parents in the front seat.
Finally, at about 3 a.m., my mother went in and came back with a key.
My mother would be crushed if she knew that I knew that. I never told. She wanted so much for me to be safe and have a different life than the one she had.
So many ugly things happened to us. We came out to get in the car, and all four tires were slashed.
Despite the hatred, my father did well and worked hard. He didn't go to college, but he must have had great aptitude, because he became an engineer in the Army.
His exact job was, of course, a secret.
Our family wasn't really close, and we didn't touch very often. Neither of my parents seemed to know how to be physically affectionate with us.
In high school, I would always jump back if I were touched, when I was touched incidentally, even, in a crowded hallway.
I was exposed to a new layer of racism in high school. I had never heard the term high yeller until I watched the Spike Lee film, and then I experienced it firsthand. In the hierarchy of skin color, I witnessed and was subjected to more ugly judgments.
I was also surrounded by closeted gay boys in high school. I remember being with my friend John, and he wouldn't stop crying. I said, "What is it, John?"
Through his tears, he choked out, "I'm gay."
Another gay male friend would...
I asked him why he didn't tell me sooner, even though I already knew. And he said it was because he thought I wouldn't love him anymore.
Another gay male friend was a Marine, and it was hard for him to be who he is. It hurt so much. That kind of judgment for who I am or someone else is, it truly hurts.
I was also getting the message that I was less than as a female.
My brother seemed to live a completely different life than I did. My parents always treated him differently than my sisters and me. They focused on making his life easier, and they had higher expectations for him.
It was assumed that he would graduate from high school, and I didn't know it at the time, that it was also my mother's greatest secret hope that I too would graduate from high school.
I didn't think of it as a great accomplishment, but I was the first female in my family to graduate, and for my mom, that was huge. She couldn't stop crying at my ceremony.
I learned later why that was so important to her. Her crushed dreams were cast upon me, the daughter most like her, as deep hopes.
My mother signed us up for all kinds of activities, and one of those was dance.
Dance is really why I'm still here. I find so much freedom and healing in dance. It lets things out, allows me to release what needs to be released.
Dancing and music are such a part of me. It was what I wanted to do for a career, but I wasn't allowed to.
We lived in D.C., not New York. In D.C., sensible people take a civil service test and go to work for the government for 20 years. That's security.
But I didn't need job security. I needed freedom, and as a young adult, I persisted. I was drawn to movement and creativity and became a dance teacher and a graphic designer.
In 1998, I moved to California with my husband, who had been transferred. Naturally, he was an undercover agent.
At our wedding, his best man commented on what a better man he had become. I thought he just meant he was happier now.
In time, my husband regressed to his old relationship patterns and became mentally abusive toward me.
We eventually divorced.
Sleep was always elusive for me. I started drinking to fall asleep, and that led me to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Through the 12 steps, I started doing forgiveness work. Step 9 is making amends.
My mom and I had a difficult relationship, and I really wanted to mend it. So I wrote her a heartfelt letter, and we stopped yelling at each other.
I was spiritually seeking. I started dating a Mormon man. I learned a lot about the Bible and was even baptized Mormon, but I knew I did not belong.
I just didn't know where to go.
Then my friend Tammy brought me to Unity of Walnut Creek's Crab Feed in 2008. Everyone was dancing and having so much fun. The energy was so cool. I started coming here.
The way I looked at me began to change. Freedom is what grabbed me. I felt my spirit could soar here.
God is here. Love is here. I felt it from a lot of people here. Finally, I was among people who are open and, for the most part, non-judgmental.
I was hungry for more. I came to every SEE class and every other kind of class. Inner questions started getting answers, and dots were connected.
I took every one of Reverend Sheila's classes. She really helped me understand Jesus. I didn't know who he was before.
Unity helped me to understand why I never felt right in church, no matter which church I was going to, Baptist, Catholic, or Mormon. I never did belong.
Until now. What I realized at Unity that I never knew as a little child is that I am one.
I had eczema my whole life. And just before I started coming to Unity, I had the most horribly painful flare-up that I had to go to the ER naked with a coat wrapped around me.
The reason is clear to me now. I needed to forgive on a cellular level. I forgave the woman who told my 3-year-old self that I didn't have the right to exist.
I forgave the man at the hotel front desk who refused my family a place to sleep.
I forgave my parents for the many hurtful things that happened growing up. I forgave people in general. I forgave myself and even God.
I never blamed God for anything, but I forgave anyway. And oh, what freedom I have found in forgiveness.
My heart was healing and my spirit was awakening.
But my mind was still sleepless, and I had bouts of uncontrolled depression and mania. Finally, I went to see a psychiatrist and was diagnosed as bipolar.
The last time I had a manic episode, I was taking the class Finding Yourself in Transition with Reverend Sheila, and I realized I was in the wilderness, and it was okay to be there. I didn't know how, but I knew that it would end.
That was the first time I was aware that I was in a manic state, so I didn't lose it. I just watched as a witness.
I'm on a whole new frontier of healing now. I prayed recently knowing that if I really need help at this time in my life, it will be there. I've done almost everything on my own up until now.
My recent prayers led me to a very generous counselor who took me on and started working from that 3-year-old experience forward.
I am freeing myself to be myself on every level now. mind, heart, and spirit. And it's not just about me. I felt really motivated to tell my story today because of the hurtful things that are going on in the world.
People are not aware of the depth of hurt that bigotry causes.
I think what's happening in our country and in our world is happening for a reason. To awaken us, to heal us, and to return us to our natural state of oneness.
Recently, I watched a video on Facebook where a white man and some black men were having a conversation.
One of the black men, Charles, said he wanted his children to be happy, to have a good job, and to go to school like everyone wants for their children.
And this young white guy seemed shocked that Charles would want the same thing for his children as he did. Tears were just streaming down my face.
In the past, I would have kept this deep sadness locked inside and numbed it.
That day, I freely cried and talked about it. I talked to my counselor and later with some friends over dinner.
By the time I got home, I was able to pray for this young white man who simply didn't understand. I sent he and his children love because that's what they need.
That's what the world needs right now, love. All of this hate is coming out of fear and teachings of ignorance. That young white man was a poster child for ignorance.
I could resort to calling him names and be mean about it, but what good would that do?
When we judge someone else, we're judging ourselves. When we say mean things, we're saying them to ourselves.
I have a process that works for me now. I talk about the things that cause pain, and I pray about it.
The silence needs to be broken. People are afraid to stand up and voice their true feelings.
People often ignore off-color jokes, but we need all of us to have the courage to stand up and say it's not okay.
And it's not just my mom or Charles. Even a terrorist wants their kids to graduate from high school to be loved and thrive in life.
My mom and I are connecting on a whole new level now. I sent her some spiritual material, and she's interested in learning more.
We can all progress further than we ever imagined. Along with my siblings and me, my mom went back to complete high school and even earned her own college degrees.
It's never too late. We can all succeed and heal. It's about being open to who we truly are.
I know this now in my bones. Not only am I supposed to be here, but I'm needed here to take a stand for truth. And so are you.
The dance of all of our beautiful human diversity is a cause for celebration, a return home to oneness.
We are one.
Let's bless Sula with a song.
How could anyone?